Coming up on KUCB News, culture campers put on a show in Unalaska, and an Alaska podcast looks back at the Exxon Valdez. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Tuesday, August 15th, 2017. Young Unalaskans celebrated traditional Anungan values at Camp Agayu last week, but as KUCB's Barrett Wilbur reports, the culture camp tries to teach kids to embrace diversity of all kinds.
Campers huddle in the hallway of the Burma Road Chapel, dressed as sea otter hunters. The kids adjust their bentwood visors while community members file into rows of folding chairs.
Am I missing any person?
When will blow?
With costumes complete, they're ready to perform an Anungan folktale they've been practicing all week at Camp Agayu about a greedy otter hunter who betrays the octopus that helps him. The whiskers on their paper visors aren't genuine sea lion, but imitation beach grass strung with beads. For 5 years, Sharon Livingston has organized Camp A, where first, second, and third graders immerse themselves in traditional stories, crafts, and foods. By encouraging kids to explore Anungan culture, she says they learn to see the value in cultures of all kinds.
We believe that when you accept other people into your culture and teach them about it, they will learn how, at a very, very early age, to respect other cultures. And that's important in a town like ours when we have every nationality you can think of here.
And while the folktale doesn't have a happy ending for the greedy hunter, Livingston says it does encourage honesty and integrity towards your neighbors. For the Anunga, that's a meaningful lesson.
You know, the Anungan people have been here for so long. We've been here for over 10,000 years, and we're not going anywhere.
In Unalaska, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
Unalaskans have 3 days left to declare candidacy for the upcoming city election. In October, voters will cast their ballots for 3 city council seats, currently held by Rochelle Hatfield, Udelka LeClaire, and John Waldron. They'll also decide 2 spots on the school board, currently held by Cherry Tan and Fernando Barrera. The deadline for prospective candidates to file at City Hall is this Thursday. The Anchorage-based telecom company Quintillion has appointed an interim CEO, following the departure of its former leader, Elizabeth Pierce. After she resigned last week, citing personal reasons, George Tronsrue assumed control of the company, which is trying to complete the first phase of its fiber-optic cable network and bring high-speed internet to northwestern Alaska. Tronsrue joins Quintillion after 7 years as president of MFSI Government Group, a national security and infrastructure contractor for the U.S. government and military. Quintillion officials say the CEO swap won't affect their December deadline to bring the system online. They haven't released any further information on Phase 2, when the company will decide on other Alaska communities to include in their network. In 1989, the Exxon Valdez oil tanker ran aground, spilling 11 million gallons of crude into Prince William Sound. Some look back and see it as an unprecedented, unthinkable event. But in fact, people warned about it and tried to prevent it. Before the pipeline was even built, fishermen in Cordova fought to keep oil tankers out of the sound. This summer, Alaska's Energy Desk is producing a series called Midnight Oil, about the state's long and complicated love affair with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Today, Rachel Waldholz shares the story of when the one thing fishermen feared would happen did.
20 years before the pipeline was even built, Ross Mullins was already warning about an oil spill in Prince William Sound. Mullins is in his 80s now. He lives surrounded by history. Literally, his house in Cordova is piled with stuff. In the kitchen, he's watching a YouTube tutorial on mixing your own flavors of vaping fluid.
This is my favorite at the moment, is Rakuki. It's made as raspberry, cucumber, and kiwi.
Mullins came up to Cordova from the Bay Area in the early 60s. He was a hippie and a photographer. He didn't mean to stay, but he got sucked into fishing. And when he first heard the plans for the Trans-Alaska pipeline to end in Valdez, he says he saw the risk right away. In the 60s and 70s, there was a series of well-publicized oil spills all over the world. Mullins says he knew that if Alaska's oil was transported by tanker, a disaster was inevitable. So he rallied the local fishermen's union, and they levied a penny per fish tax on themselves to hire a law firm and challenge the pipeline in 1971.
Well, we called ourselves the Mighty 500. We probably didn't have a 500.
But they went up against the oil industry and the state, and they won. Their lawsuit, along with one from national environmental groups, halted the pipeline. Their victory was short-lived. In 1973, Congress exempted the pipeline from the lawsuits. So Mullins and the fishermen switched gears. They pushed for the highest safety standards possible. He remembers one trip to D.C., standing in Senator Ted Stevens' office.
Well, one of the things I remember distinctly him saying was, I can assure you that not one drop of oil will touch the waters of Prince William Sound.
It was one of many promises made in the 70s, as lawmakers and industry tried to get the pipeline moving. They promised that tankers operating in Prince William Sound would have double hulls, and they promised a state-of-the-art system to track vessels through the sound, and a world-class oil spill response system. But one by one, the promises made by industry, the state, and the federal government failed to materialize. Or the safeguards simply eroded. In the end, the system failed more quickly than even Mullins had imagined it could.
It was a hell of a lot sooner than I thought it would be. I mean, the oil had only been going through the pipe for 12 years or whatever, and, you know, that's not a long time for something that's supposed to be state-of-the-art to function.
Flying over the sound today, the pilot points out a white and red navigational marker sticking up out of an unassuming patch of water. From 1,000 feet up, it doesn't look any bigger than a camera tripod.
You see this post right here? That's Fly Reef. That's where the Exxon Valdez ran aground.
In the distance are the icebergs calving off the giant Columbia Glacier. It was these same chunks of ice that the Exxon Valdez was trying to avoid when it collided with Bly Reef. This is the spot where all systems failed. The tanker's crew made a series of inexplicable mistakes. The captain had been drinking that night and left an overtired third mate in charge. Inadequate tracking didn't pick up the ship as it headed off course, and the shallow reef sheared right through the tanker's single hull. Today, things have changed. Congress passed a raft of reforms after the Exxon Valdez. Things like requiring new tankers to have double hulls, better vessel tracking, and escort tugboats. Prince William Sound is now guarded by an elaborate system to prevent future spills. But for years, the Exxon Valdez loomed over the fishing town of Cordova like a dark shadow. The spill coincided with plunging fish prices, and in the 90s, the town dropped into a depression. People lost their boats. They lost their livelihoods. Many worried there was no future for Cordova. Today, that fear is lifting. There's a whole new generation of fishermen. They were just kids during the spill. Like Mike Mickelson. He was 5 when the tanker struck Bly Reef.
Most of us, if not all of us, got told in school, well, whatever you do, don't go fishing and go to college and make something of yourself. And everybody went to college and quite a few of us came back and bought into fishing. So.
Today, he owns 2 fishing boats. And now, he says, there's a community of young people, all taking a chance on Prince William Sound. It's a big chance. Getting into fishing means taking out a loan to buy a permit and another loan to buy a boat.
I had a couple friends that talked me into buying into sailing. It's like, oh, yeah, hundreds of thousands of dollars, no problem. You'll be fine. And it's been a hard road, but you know, I'm going to make it. And that's the great thing.
Mickelson and his peers are making a big commitment to this place. It's a bet that fishermen can still make a living in Cordova, and that there won't be another Exxon Valdez. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholz in Anchorage.
That story was from a podcast by Alaska's Energy Desk called Midnight Oil. Episode 7 has the full story of the Exxon Valdez oil spill as told by the fishermen of Prince William Sound. To hear that story and the rest of the series, visit alaskapublic.org or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Since violence broke out in Charlottesville, Virginia over the weekend, both of Alaska's U.S. senators have condemned the violent Unite the Right demonstrations where a counter-protester was killed. Senator Dan Sullivan issued a strongly worded statement that singled out the alt-right and their allies, writing, quote, "The sight of white supremacists and neo-Nazis marching in an American city is a disgrace." Sullivan also said he welcomes news that the U.S. Justice Department is investigating what he and Attorney General Jeff Sessions describe as an act of domestic terrorism. Hundreds of Facebook users added their own comments to his post. Some thanked Sullivan for specifically calling out far-right groups, but quite a few commenters defended the white supremacists or complained that Sullivan should have allotted equal blame to counter-protesters on the left. Of 100 comments that appeared on Sullivan's post, just over half criticized him for condemning only the neo-Nazi side. Nearly all of the comments appear to have come from Alaskans. Senator Lisa Murkowski has also weighed in on Facebook, saying, quote, "Hatred, racism, anti-Semitism, and bigotry are not welcome in America and will not be condoned." Murkowski did not specifically name-check the alt-right or neo-Nazis, and comments on her post were more mixed. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.